Welcome to Access Advocacy on thepowerofvoices.com. I'm Adrienne Shapiro. The goals of Access Advocacy are to improve the lives of patients and caregivers who are dealing with the chronic illness of sickle cell disease. Today, we have the great honor of speaking with C. Randy Mills, who is the president and CEO of the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine, CIRM. During this, I'm going to call him Randy because I'm not used to Randall, and I hope that's okay.
All my friends call me Randy.
I'm honored, as are many of us. So we're going to have Randy talk a bit about his organization and his journey. And you all know that CIRM, I carry it so closely to my heart. Many of you have heard me speak of it on the show, my tweets, on Facebook page. I cannot speak highly enough of this organization. And we're really, really honored to have Randy speak with us today. When I first heard him speak, I was like, yeah, because out of his mouth came the words, the patient first. And we hear a lot about organizations putting patients first. And we always hope, you know, I talk about hope, and we come from a very hopeful culture. And we hope, and we are happy to get what we get. But seldom does really that hope come to play full term as it has with those words from his mouth. So I just want to open this with saying thank you, and in the work you've done and I've witnessed and so many of us, you have truly put the patient first. So I just want to start it off with saying thank you. And
thank you very much. And what I will say in return is it should be viewed by the citizens of California as unacceptable for anything else. Our obligation, my job, is to be responsive to those with unmet medical needs. And if we're not doing that, and if the patient isn't first, then we're failing. And I'm very proud to say, and very humbled and honored to say, that I get to lead an organization that does put the patient first. And I could not be more proud of them and the work that they're doing.
Well, let's talk a little bit. So that was back in 2014, and you've done a lot since then. But just recently, you put out the 2016 annual report. And it was very interesting, your timing of that, because there was a lot of talk on Twitter and Facebook and a few of the other magazines and newspapers where they were talking about ethics and information not being reported correctly in clinical trials and things like that. And your report came out, and I kind of held it up as an example of things being done correctly. Can you just give us a little bit of an overview of the 2016 annual report?
Absolutely. So I think the first thing that, and I encourage people to read it, they can get it at CIRM.ca.gov, or talk to our communications people and they'll mail you a hard copy. But I think the first thing that you notice about it is that what's on the front cover isn't a patient of a stem cell or a gene or some kind of technology. It's a beautiful little four-year-old girl named Evangelina who was born with severe combined immunodeficiency disorder, which is often known as baby in the bubble disease, where they have no ability to fight infection and usually die. And she's on the cover playing because she's been cured of that disease. And she's been cured of that disease because of phenomenal research efforts that have been conducted in the state of California by researchers from the state of California, supported by funding from CIRM. And so one of the most important aspects of the annual report wasn't just to objectively talk about what we've been able to accomplish, but it was to tie what we've been able to accomplish back to the reason which we're attempting to do this, and the reason that CIRM exists. And one of the sort of working titles we had for the annual report as we were putting it together was simply why. And that's stands for why does CIRM exist? Why are we here? And so, it just couldn't have been a better example of why we exist and what we want to do. And layered into that, though, is the appropriate amount of humility and respect that we need to have for all of the work we have yet to do. So we are making progress, we are curing people, and we are not nearly done. And I think it's important that we balance those two, and I hope we attempted to do that and be as honest and transparent as we possibly could be by balancing those two things, that celebrating the great successes that we've had and then pointing out that we have a long way to go. And as the way these things happen sometimes, we had a patient that we were featuring in the annual report named Frank St. Clair, who was participating in one of our clinical trials. And right after we did the photo shoot and right before we issued the annual report, Frank died. And we talked about that, and we talked with his wife about Frank. And we made the decision that the only correct thing to do was to leave Frank's profile in the report unaltered as a tribute to him and as a reminder to all of us how precious time is, and that when we talk about no time to lose in this game, we mean it. And we have to be joyful, and we have to celebrate our successes, but we have to be very mindful that we need to work like people's lives depend on it, because people's lives depend on it.
Well, I just wanted to say about that, 2016, I've seen a lot of loss. And I think that the fact that you honored Frank in that way and his family is very important to us, because those of us who are waiting and depending and believing that the cure is here, we are doing it with our whole hearts and our lives. And our lives matter in that we are giving up our tissue and our time and putting our hands and our lives in the hands of researchers. But it matters that we were here and that we did those things. And for those of us who lose our loved ones during the process, feel that for them not to be mentioned is sort of like diminishing that. And I think that it also makes other people who are looking at us think that people dying in the process is a reason not to do. And we have to carry that discussion ourselves. We have to say, no, dying is not a reason to do. Dying is absolutely 100% the reason to do and why we're doing this. So,
well, I'll tell you, we're coming after sickle cell. And it's going away. And it's going away forever. And we will hunt that down, and we will get that done.
I know. And the cool thing, and you hear me say this all the time, is you're going to get sickle cell. And in getting sickle cell, you're also going to get a lot of other things for us, the African American community, fixed or make it fixable, because we don't really have donors. We don't have donors for a lot of reasons. A lot of people think the number one reason is the fact that we're afraid or we're uninformed, but the fact that it's so hard to find genetic matches, even in our own families, that it's going to take using the technology to use our own tissue to create cures for ourselves to allow us to take full advantage of this science and of the future. You're not only getting sickle cell, you're getting a whole lot of stuff for us. And not only those of us in America, but around the world. And I think it's splendid.
Yeah, it will be done.
So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about a couple of things. Our listeners know I'm kind of new to Twitter, but we're doing good. We're doing good. And one of the things I've been reading about a lot are how our biotech companies are being purchased, or large portions of them being bought out by foreign investors. And a lot of that's come up is mostly China. And you know, for me, I'm very concerned. I really want this amazing technology to be available to everyone. I want it to be, I don't know, not the new laptop computer for America, but I really feel so strongly that it needs to be held in a place where the science is going to be really good and ethical. Can you speak a little bit to that? I know that CIRM has put in this amazing infrastructure up and down the coast of California that includes centers of excellence, where you put in, you know, huge buildings and equipment and computers, and we won't even talk about the big brains. But you've established up and down or help. Well, I'm going to say established, because without your funding, we wouldn't have it. You've established this network up and down our coast for our work. What are your thoughts about the research or the cures being basically sold away?
So we have 12 major research facilities that we've built in the state of California. We have 3 alpha clinics. We have a translating center, an accelerating center, a genomics center, an iPS cell bank. Foreign investment is probably essential to advancing these things. But there's no way, statutorily and otherwise, that the work that is being done at CIRM will be shelved and not see the light of day. We wouldn't allow that. We have what we call march-in rights. So if that were to happen, we can actually take it back and do it ourselves, and we absolutely would. But the nice thing is that the ability to do it and the threat of it prevent its need. And so, you know, as goes California, goes the industry of regenerative medicine. We are the dominant player. If California were a country, it would be a dominant player in this. And so we have, and not me, long before me, the architects of Proposition 71, Bob Klein, a great attorney, James Harrison, put in place provisions to prevent that kind of thing from happening, where technology was developed but not put to use. And so there are access provisions, there are pricing provisions, and there's the ability for us to take a project over if it's not being developed.
Well, that makes me feel better. So once again, we have the great honor of speaking with Randy Mills, President and CEO of CIRM, California Institute for Regenerative Medicine, and you're listening to Access Advocacy on thepowerofvoices.com. All right, now I'm getting very excited, because as you know, I like talking to people, and you've got this great new program where people are actually being able to create a message, their own personal message, and setting their own sort of, I guess, call to action to get others to help support the work that you're doing. So can we talk just a little bit about that? And that's the...
Stem cell resolution.
Yes, the 2017 stem cell resolution. I've been working on mine.
Good. We have a communications team here and that's one of the things that they've done. But in a broader way, they have taken on the task of creating what we call an army of advocates, where and every month, I think this last quarter they added 173 to the Army, where we're making sure that when a message needs to be delivered, we have the ability and the infrastructure to do it. And so the resolution is part of that engagement program, but it's part of a larger concept that we have that says, let's never forget what the most important thing is. It's not interesting science. It's not a good return on investment. It's people. It's children growing up. It's mothers being able to stay with their families. It's people. And so that's what they do.
I want to talk about people again. So I also want to mention that your website is really, really helpful. Again, we send people to it constantly for information and consider it really just amazing. But it's also easy to use, and it comes across kind of like your organization as a place that we find open to our questions and helpful in many ways. But one of the things we get asked about all the time is about how things are set up, your reporting structure. Mm-hmm. How do people, there's all this money, and how do people kind of work through it, or how do they know what's going on, or just basically the structure? So if you could give us just a little chat about that, that'd be helpful.
Sure. So our reporting structure at CIRM is very important for us, because the transparency makes sure that we are always accountable to the people that we serve, which is the citizens and the patients of the state of California. And so we report to our oversight board, which is our board of directors, called the Independent Citizens Oversight Committee, which is a 29-member governing board that is comprised of experts in the field, academic leaders, chancellors and deans of medical schools from the state, industry experts, and very importantly, patient advocates. And that is our board of directors. We meet with them quarterly in person. We meet with them telephonically every single month. So we're constantly in communication with them. On the other side of it, we also have a financial oversight committee, which is led by the state controller, Betty Yee. And they look at us from the standpoint of making sure we're being responsible financially to the patients and the citizens of the state of California. And then in between those two things, we have two other groups. One of them is what we call our grants working group. And this is a group of independent external advisors that help us make decisions on which programs we should fund and which programs that we shouldn't fund. I actually had the honor of serving on the grants working group for 5 years before I came to CIRM, and was one of the reasons I was so familiar with the organization. And then we have a new program, and that new program is called our Clinical Advisory Panel, or CAPS. And that's where, for every clinical program that we have experts designated in the particular disease area. We have our own internal experts, team members, on the advisory panel. And then, as you know, we have patient or patient advocates that participate. And the point of that is to make sure we're getting all of the stakeholders at the table, not just the experts, but in the scientific experts in the field, but all of the stakeholders at the table telling us how and what we should do to make these programs better. And you know that your description of this program was one of the most moving things that I had ever heard, because it was exactly what we intended to happen when we created the program.
Well, I just, again, being included and not just included, but having parity and having a voice, those of us living with the disease, it's really revolutionary. I mean, I hope you guys understand that it's one of the few places really truly in the world where that's being done. And I'm hoping that CIRM has started a movement.
Well, I will tell you, by design, it was very important that the patient participation on CAHPS wasn't done in a manner where we were just placating or pandering. It was the sincerity behind that participation was so important to us that it be real and that it be respected, both in both ways, where a committee would say that's a great idea, or where the committee would have the courage and I would say the respect to say it's not a good idea. And I am so pleased that that level of honesty and respect is occurring in that program. It's one of the most, if not the most, rewarding thing that we've implemented in the last few years.
Well, I know that we're running out of time, so I don't know if you have a little bit more time, but what we'd like to know from you is, what would you like to say to our listeners? If they were sitting down and having this chat with you, what would you most like to share with them?
Don't ever give us a break. Don't ever let up on us. We are doing everything we can. In the annual report, we refer to it as all in, all out. We are all in to get this done, and we are going all out to make it happen. But make sure we do. It's an invaluable role to play, to partner with us, to make sure that we never let it be lost from our vision that people are at the end game of what we're trying to do. And you keep reminding us of that. I promise I will keep reminding us of that internally. And if we do that and we hold ourselves to that, great things are going to happen, and great things are happening. And while that's great, we have to have that level of respect and humility that says that we're not nearly there, and we have a lot more to do, and we need to work with urgency that is commensurate with the task we have.
I just want to say that the personality or the values of an organization really are set by its leadership. And I'm going to tell you a story. I was advocating for a very sick young lady with sickle cell disease. And she was at UCLA hospital. And I was going several days a week, staying many long hours. She was very, very unwell and actually lived in North Carolina. And so I was going to try to ensure that she could return home safely. And one day I was getting there, and Dr. Cohn from UCLA, who is one of your scientists, was getting off the elevator. So he sees me, and, you know, we're doing some work together, and he says, "Adrian." And I said, "Oh, hi, Don, how are you doing?" And we have this big hug and everything. He had this huge smile on his face. And I said, "So, you know, it's odd to see you out of the lab." And he says, "Oh, I've got to show you something." And he pulls out his cell phone and he showed me the picture of his latest bubble baby. And she'd been cured. She'd come from overseas. And he shows me pictures. And he's showing, I mean, he's like a dad, right? I don't know how many pictures of this kid he had, but he had this picture. He says, "Look, this is what she looked like when I got her." And he's fast forwarding and he stops and he shows me a couple little, you know, cute shots in between. But he gets to the one he'd taken that morning. And here is this rosy cheeked, curly haired, bright eyed kid. And he says to me, "They're going home." And I tell you, my heart as a mother was so filled at the absolute magic of it all, the miracle of the cure, but even more than that, the way he held the love for that child and what he'd done. And I have to say that that vibrates throughout your organization. And well done.
Well, thank you. And it's why bringing the reason behind the organization to the forefront of our message is so important. Dr. Cohn, one of the most exceptional and brilliant and fabulous people that I've ever met, like you, understands the alternative. They understand that, and there's no one between them and the alternative. He is the last line. He is the last hope. And I think when you experience that, and you have to experience, in his case, saying goodbye to a child, you never, ever want to have that happen again, and you never want to have a family have to experience that again. And I don't want to be overly morbid about it, but it's a little bit of a stick and a little bit of a carrot. You know, it's great to have success. And the other part of that motivation is the alternative is almost unimaginably sad. And so we will keep going, and we will push on, and we will get this done and keep working and never be satisfied, never, ever be satisfied. And that is one of the things that our organization has embraced. It does not matter where we are. Wherever we are, we can get better, and we will do that. And that's why.
Yeah, that's why. I just want you to let the scientists and everyone working towards these cures to know that those of us who are living with these diseases, we know the dark side. We have had generations of living with the dark side, and that the work that you're doing for us is the light. And once again, we want to thank Randy Mills, President and CEO of the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine. We'll be back in a minute with Kevin McCormick, also of CIRM, and we're going to talk about stem cell resolutions. Welcome back to Access Advocacy on thepowerofvoices.com. I'm with Kevin McCormick of the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine, and we're going to talk about the My 2017 Stem Cell Resolution campaign. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, Adrienne. How are you? Happy New Year.
Oh, Happy New Year to you, too. So I'm very excited about this campaign. Can you tell the listeners a bit about it?
Yes, this campaign was the idea of my colleague Karen Ring, and she thought that it would be fun to start the new year off by making a kind of a commitment, a challenge to ourselves in some cases, of what we're going to do this year, and kind of set new goals for ourselves in terms of stem cells. And it can be for everyone, from researchers to students to members of the public, patients, patient advocates. We all have a role in this. We're all supporters of stem cell research. And so we can all be kind of make a resolution ourselves to help focus our attention on what it is we hope to achieve in the coming year. And so the idea was to engage people in a simple way, but also hopefully a fun way. And then at the end of the month, we'll publish some of the best resolutions we've seen, and then the ones that we think are the best, we'll give them one of our treasured and valuable stem cell champions T-shirts.
I love the color. Okay, so I've been thinking about mine, and you know I have all these ideas. So I thought of one for Ron.
You have to think of your own. You can't thinking of things for other people.
Okay, so I thought of one for Ron. Mm-hmm. And I thought of one for me. So I want mine to be that I'm going to challenge myself to get a one new stem cell champion to represent each 100 people in California that have sickle cell disease. So that's it. So that means there's 11,000 of us. That means I have to get how many?
110?
Is that all? I can do that. Okay, that's mine.
And my resolution is to help you do that.
Oh, good, good. But I think...
No, but those are small things. I mean, you say, is that all? But I mean, for every person you engage, they probably talk to 5, 6, 10 other people. I mean, it's that old notion about, you know, if someone has a bad experience at a restaurant, they'll tell 10 people. So the idea is what you're doing is you're not just talking to that one person, you're talking to everyone that they're talking to and everyone that those people are talking to. So you have this, it's like a ripple effect. It spreads out and starts to spread to other states and other people and raise awareness about what we're doing here in California and hopefully raise support for it as well. I think this is a really important time to be doing stuff like that, to be really active, because with a new administration coming into office where two of the members kind of have spoken out quite vociferously in the past about funding for things like embryonic stem cell research or fetal tissue research, which have been incredibly important over the last few years. I think it's increasingly important that we have a group of informed and educated and engaged members of the public who are willing to say, this is important to me and we need to stand up and we need to support it. So engaging a small number of people may seem like a small thing, but with each person you talk to, those people support to others and others. And sooner or later, those numbers expand and increase. And then we have a really engaged and a large advocate support community.
Well, I think the one thing I am kind of good at is telling people what to do. So I'll get my my people to engage and then tell them that they have to get a certain number engaged. Let's see. 3. I like 3s at least. So a minimum of 3. And let's
3
see what happens.
3 is good as well, because it doesn't seem overwhelming. I think sometimes we can, particularly with New Year's resolutions, people make things that because they seem like this is what they should do, it's great. You know, I'm going to lose 50 pounds or whatever. I'm going to give up smoking tomorrow. Those are great ideas, but often it's a little overwhelming. And I think starting out with small is good, because if you do 3 and then you say, well, that was easy, I can do 4. And so the idea is set something that's achievable, that's kind of manageable, and then expand from there.
Well, if you want to know more about this, you can check out their website. It's www.cirm, that's CIRM.ca.gov. And as you know, there's lots of other good stuff there. There's some samples. Now, I have another question. Can somebody borrow somebody else's 2017 stem cell resolution?
Oh, absolutely. They don't have to be unique resolutions. In many ways, I think for a lot of people, it's just going to be something like, I'm going to be an advocate of stem cell research this year, or I'm going to talk about it to my friends. I'm going to be more engaged in writing to Congress or to the FDA and urging them to take more action to speed up the approval process. So there may be many different things, there may be many different people, but a lot of the goals and the resolutions may be the same, and there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, in some cases, that's an even more powerful way of unifying people around a small group of goals, because the danger, I think, is everyone spreads out so thinly that none of these goals work together. When we want to use this as a way of generating an informed, active, and engaged group of people so that we can be even more effective.
Do you want to know what I want Ron to do for 2017?
I think we want Ron to know what Ron wants to do.
No. Okay, so here's my idea. I'm going to tell you anyway because I think it's great. I learned something from Ron. So we were all at the World Stem Cell Summit together, right? All
mm-hmm.
of us. And he came to me and he said, I met the most interesting man. And I thought, those are words I use. Those aren't Ron's words. I mean, I meet the most interesting people ever, but not Ron. And he'd met a stem cell scientist who did work with animals.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there aren't many people who know about that work. And so I think his 2017 resolution should be to spread the word about the fact that stem cells are being used to help our pets and animals, and it's a viable therapy. And, you know, having been in the disease sort of world for many years, I've often said that if the people who love their pets got together with the people who so much love their kids, and we all got together and got behind something, could you imagine all that passion?
Oh, so, yeah. Actually, yes. We've written some pieces on our stem cell blog about the work that they're doing with animals, particularly at places like UC Davis, which has a wonderful Jan Nolte up there runs the California Institute for Regenerative Cures, and it's a wonderful place to do research on people. But UC Davis also has an amazing medical school, veterinary school, where they're doing some really interesting work with animals, and particularly dogs and horses. And in fact, some of the research that they've done with those animals in terms of increasing their ability to, for older animals to repair broken bones or torn ligaments or various other things like that, is now helping influence and shape the work that's being done in people, influencing the work to kind of help people who are much older and their bones aren't healing quite so well to repair those bones. So it's been really interesting talking to some of these people, and I met some fascinating people at the World Stem Cell Summit as well who are working with horses. And hearing about the kind of the huge benefits that this work is having on animals, and they what they're doing is they're looking at the work that's being done in people and adapting that for animals, just as we're looking at what's being done with animals and adapting it for people. It's a really wonderful reciprocal relationship. And you're right about that notion of people love their pets and they're really committed to doing everything they can to help them. And the beauty of that is that by doing that, people may benefit. And it's ironic, isn't it, that the so-called man's best friend may turn out to be man's best friend, because the things we learn from about dogs may well end up helping save our lives or make our lives more comfortable.
Well, I think that's perfect. You know what? The next segment is really going to be his interview with the most fascinating man that he's met at the Stem Cell Summit.
Absolutely. Does he drink Dos Equis?
I don't know. Did he have that hair thing going on too? No, he didn't have the hair thing either.
No, I met a really interesting researcher there who was talking about, he took this horse that was really badly injured. Its hind leg was bad. There was tendon damage and everything. And they were close to putting it down. And so he worked with it and helped it kind of repair the tendons. And 2 years later, it was a national barrel racing champion. Not just a horse that could run. This was a horse that was winning national championships at the rodeo. So clearly, this is extraordinary work. These people are really interesting. And they're every bit as passionate and care about their work and their patients as any of the doctors who work with people are. It's always fun to sit down and talk to someone who is really that passionate about the work they do, because you learn so much.
Well, I think that is really it. When I think about the world that I'm now into with CIRM and stem cells, it is that passion that whenever we get together and we start talking and the energy level just rises, and it doesn't matter which part of it you're doing. I spent 10 minutes with a woman who did, she was all on the end of packaging and shipping stem cells. Mm-hmm. And it was incredible. When I got done talking with her, I mean, I initially started it because I'm always wanting to learn more, and I want to assure people that the material is being handled correctly and ethically, and everybody's doing everything they can to ensure quality. Mm-hmm. But I talked to this woman, and I was like, wow. Who knew how much it took, how many people it took to ensure that, how many iterations they did of the packaging, and how carefully they handled the sign-off of it. And I was so excited when I left her. It was as if I had met yet another one of the most exciting people in the world.
There's so many of us.
That there
okay.
are.
All
okay,
right,
well,
Adrian,
thank you.
Always good chatting to you.
Okay, take care. Bye.
Okay, bye.
Thanks again, Kevin. And now we're going to have a bit of that interview that my husband, Ron Shapiro, did with Bob Harmon. He is from VetStem, and Here he is.
This is Access Advocacy. I'm Ron Shapiro, board member, and we are here at the World Stem Cell Summit. I'm speaking with Bob Harmon, who is with VetStem. Now, most people think of animals as test subjects for humans, but what Bob has done, he has done a lot of stem cell work on animals, not as experiments, but very successfully. And you're allowed to get things done because you're dealing with animals as opposed to humans. And tell me a little bit about that, about what you're doing and what you've been able to accomplish.
Well, so we took the observation from your side of the aisle, as they say, University of Pittsburgh and University of California medical schools, who discovered that there were these interesting cells that looked like they did things in petri dishes. And we looked at it and said, I think those might have clinical application. And I started out, I'm a horseman, so I started out particularly in orthopedics. And horses have all kinds of orthopedic problems. So we thought, what if we use these cells to try to repair tendon and ligament injuries? Okay, so this is 2003. So we're more than a decade ago when people really weren't, they were thinking about stem cells being from embryos. So you have to decide, do you kill babies or not to advance research? These are adult stem cells derived from fat tissue. So we take a small sample of fat from a horse or from a dog with arthritis. They send it to our lab, and we put the hard part inside of a lab, so we're a little like LabCorp. So they send it to us. We extract the stem cells out, measure them that they're viable and ready. You put them in a syringe and ship it back to the veterinarian to use as he pleases. As you just heard standing here talking to a couple of practitioners, they're out at the interface. They're treating patients, and owners want their animals better. And often they want to know, well, why can't we have advanced medicine? We, through our company, have now provided treatments to more than 12,000 patients, probably 30,000 actual total injections and treatment, 12,000 patients, dogs, cats, and horses, all over North America. And we train the veterinarians with an online training course as to what stem cells are and how they apply. We teach them the pharmacology of stem cells, the things around you've learned here at this meeting, right? So you've learned how these cells work or how we think they work. And so we just created a service business around that. And it was easy for us because we went to the FDA and we said, we just want to use the dog's own cells. We're not creating a product. We're not changing it. We're not doing anything. And they literally told us, that's fine. If you go to create donor cells someday, come back and see us, because that's really a product. And so every year we would talk to them, and they were just fine. It's called, on our side, regulatory discretion. Although they could regulate it if they wanted to, they looked at it and said, looks like you're not selling stem cells. You're selling a service to process a tissue. A little bit like a blood bank or a donor eye or bone bank. Mm-hmm. And so that's, up until the last 4 years, that's been our entire business model, is helping vets be able to provide these treatments, mostly in orthopedics, but not all. We've treated liver disease. We treat kidney disease, more than 100 cats with serious chronic failing kidneys. Big problem in the human, right? And so I'm at these meetings to share, as you probably heard in my lecture, I'm trying to draw the analogies between the animals and the humans.
Well, we talked last night when I met you, and after I met Bob, I ran over to my wife. I said, I just met the most interesting man. I said, this guy is like, you know, we're always fighting for our daughter, but yeah, my dog has arthritis too. And mm-hmm. So what you do is let me make sure I understand. You take their stem cells, their fat tissue, right, extract the stem cells. Are you manipulating the cells in any way?
We just extract them. We want to get rid of the fat because that actually is not very functional. The connective tissue. If you have a piece of steak and you cut the fat off of it, we take the stem cells that reside in that, but get rid of all the fat. And we end up with these regenerative cells that are amazingly powerful. And, you know, it was all discovered by a plastic surgeon who realized when he sucked fat out and put it in some lady's face to, you know, to puff up mechanically to make the wrinkles not so obvious, that the skin rejuvenated. Literally, it's a practitioner standing at the patient interface and said, wow, you know, the pictures they take each year to see how they do, they go, there's something about that area, and it's not just the mechanical, because the fat will eventually go away, but the skin got better. So a couple of guys, smart young plastic surgeon residents, went into the lab, and a year later came out and said, hey, we figured out how to take some of these cells and make them into bone and cartilage and nerve. And they filed the patents.
So the stem cells that you take out of the fat are regenerative. So you place them in an area that might have arthritis that needs the cartilage back, and it just, I'll say magically, but it grows the cartilage because the stem cells react to whatever area you've put them in, correct?
Yeah, so every area of your body has stem cells. We used to think they were only in embryos, and then we thought it's only in the bone marrow. Every place there's blood vessels, which is every place on your body, have these little stem cells called pericytes, but they're a stem cell precursor hanging around the blood vessels. So if you cut yourself, you're shaving in the morning and you cut yourself, it bleeds, right? It breaks the blood vessels. These little cells are released, and immediately they go to work, and they look around and go, okay, so I need to fix, you know, stop the bleeding. I need to repair the skin. And in a week, you can't see it. It's gone. It's how we fix ourselves every day. You know, people think that, like, there is some this magical invention. It's been around for a million years. It's how you fix yourself, how the body repairs. It's why when you get full body radiation or chemotherapy, it kills all your stem cells, and you lose all your immunity and your blood cells, and you die if you don't get a bone marrow transplant to get them back. And so it's just how we fix ourselves. All we do is concentrate them and put more of them where they're needed. Maybe it's like a troop surge. You know, it was chronic. We couldn't get the problem solved, so we send a bunch of troops in. They solve the problem, get it cleared, and then they go away. And so, and it's the same cell. So if I took a cell from your fat, isolated it, Ron, and then I said, okay, you've got an elbow arthritis problem. So I put it in your elbow. The cell looks around, and they're a little bit like a paramedic. They look around and they go, okay, so this is a joint and there's inflammation in the synovium and there's some missing cartilage and I'm going to go to work and fix those. If I took the exact same cell and put it in your liver, because I saw you last night having too many margaritas, okay, you put it in the liver. It looks around and goes, okay, these are hepatocytes. These are liver cells and there's some fibrosis happening. I need to block that first. I need to get some more blood vessels in here, bring some nutrients and get this repaired. You put that same cell on the heart or the brain, wherever you put them, the best way to describe it is they're adaptive. It is like a paramedic. When the paramedic gets there, generally he has a kit and he can sort of deal with any emergency. And if he can't deal with it, then he hauls you to the hospital. But that's sort of how they work. And all we're doing is harnessing a very natural healing and regeneration method. Doctors learn on animals. Animal doctors learn from what humans do. If we share that data properly, we move this research forward much faster.
Yeah, and I think the World Stem Cell Summit is a place for collaboration. It's like meeting people that in your everyday life you wouldn't have. I can't imagine I would have met you any place else to learn this and other people that we've met here at the summit. It's and it's just by walking around and hearing shaking somebody's hand, and maybe my dog's life will be changed. Maybe my daughter's life will be changed because of the other people that we had met that said, you know, with my wife who spoke yesterday, and scientists who said, you know, we've never been able to place a face with all this work. We're in the lab and seeing what the results can be give us a whole new life. And I think the human stem cell doctors, along with you collaborating, I think we can get there just so much faster.
Yeah, it's exactly true. You know, I thought it was going to be fairly simple when I first looked at stem cell therapy. This is going to be easy. We put cells in and make cartilage and do so. That'll be easy. It's been more complicated than we thought. But, you know, we've got so much data. And, you know, we do see the face. Our patients are different. They have four legs. But we see the patient and the owner. And the human companion animal bond is huge. Your wife might choose your dog over you. It could be.
Oh, I know she would.
Yeah. And so when we impact a dog's quality of life or a cat's quality of life, we impact the owner. Maybe just as profoundly. We provided free stem cells and all services for a military dog. It was actually on the news. Look at our website. You'll find it. Okay. This kid went to Iraq, and he was with the dog patrol and roadside bomb, and it kills the kid. The dog crawls up on top of the kid and stays until the unit gets there. when they come back to the States, the family adopts the dog. Now the dog's got a new family, and he had all of these injuries from the bomb, and he had survived it. And we provided the stem cells, and so he literally could almost not walk. And we did multiple doses, and now you see there's videos of the owner and the dog. That's priceless, right? Yeah, as they say, it's priceless. How do you, that's why we do what we do. You know, it's like day after day, somebody will call up and say, you know, my cat lived an extra 2 years, and it's some little old lady in an apartment, and that's her whole life. That bond and that effect, we affect human health by doing it. Not just sharing at this meeting, but the effect on the health of the animals dramatically affects the life of the people that live and cohabitate with their partner, you know? And so that's why we push ahead on the dark days when you're in the lab and trying to figure out how to make stuff work, and regulatory is hard. You know, I presented, I'm trying to raise more money so I can push my cat kidney program to the market. And so we're out trying to raise money and survive, you know, the market, weird market conditions. But at the end of the day, when you get one of those testimonials, somebody calls you, you get a video. It's like when somebody sees your daughter, now there's a face on it. Now they get it. It's their passion goes up for trying to cure that problem.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know humans that have pets usually live longer. Anyway, that's a proven fact.
Yep.
So your animal companion lives longer, so will you, and there's just nothing like it. And once again, we're speaking with Bob Harmon of VetStem in San Diego, and this is Access Advocacy on thepowerofvoices.com. And any last words you'd like of encouragement, or maybe somebody that's listening to our broadcast today says, I've got a pet, I got a lot of money, I'm going to go and find out about VetStem. And so hopefully maybe we've made a connection for you this way too.
That would be spectacular. You know, there's 86 million cats and 80 million dogs, 250 million people. Almost all households have a dog, cat, or a horse, or multiples of those. And they touch our lives in so many ways. So if there's somebody that wants to, even somebody that just wants to come visit and see what we do, we're in Poway, which is a little suburb in San Diego. You can come tour, see what we do. People sometimes bring their pet that got treated there so that my lab techs can see a face, not just a video. And so no doubt, if you have a broad audience, in LA, there are people that have had dogs and cats and horses already treated with stem cells. So I thank them for trusting us to do something for them. But really, it's them trusting their veterinarian and doing the right thing for those animals. And then we just come and share it at these meetings so that we spur on our human colleagues and say, this is possible. You can do it. You'll get there. Don't quit.
Those are great, great words. And I just want to thank you for taking the time to speak with me today. It's been such an honor to meet you and spend a couple days chatting with you about what you're doing. And I wish you all the luck in the world.
Great. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
We'll be back in just a second to wrap things up on Access Advocacy. We're just about out of time, but before we go, I wanted to let you know that you can learn more about our organization on our website, accessadvocacy.org, or on the Access Advocacy Facebook page. That's axisadvocacy.org. Join us again next Tuesday on thepowerofvoices.com at noon Pacific, or listen anytime on demand at accessadvocacy.org. You'll find all our programs there. I'm Adrienne Shapiro. Thank you for listening.
I've got to keep on pushing.